In honor of Black History Month at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, King Records is being honored with a traveling exhibit developed by King Studios with archival items from the Rock Hall's collection. King Records historian Brian Powers and Chris Shadler, program manager for King Studios, were the forces behind this exhibit. Welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thanks, Lee.
Thanks, Lee.
King Records' 30 Years That Changed American Music, 1943 to 1973, is official title of the exhibit. How did this exhibit come about and when?
Well, I think as all good ideas in America, it came with a discussion in a bar that me and Chris had. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been doing stuff on King Records since 2008. You know, and one of the things I did was an exhibit, which requires a lot of installing stuff. It takes a lot of time, a lot of parts to it. And we were kind of thinking about how we could go about telling the King story, but in a way that could be mobile, that would involve installing a lot of objects and things. And that was the idea of this exhibit. And Chris had some ideas of how to do that.
Yeah, I think some of the discussions that came out of those beer sessions, as I'll call them, really, there were two kind of important pieces. One was this kind of chronological timeline that Brian, you know, Brian has a book. And in that book, there's that timeline. And that really inspired some ideas. Very simply, let's just show a year-by-year kind of thing. And then also this idea of trying to capture the unique aspect of King, which, you know, I think resonated a lot with Brian and I after our fourth or fifth beer, which is that Cincinnati is the birthplace of rock and roll. And so, you know, an idea is like we have to show that in an exhibit. So I think it was those two things, putting together kind of a cool-looking exhibit that showed a simple timeline as cheaply as possible because there's no money. And then also being able to point to that exhibit to articulate this idea of Cincinnati being a birthplace of rock and roll.
So did you use any of the materials that you put together for the presentations at the library over the years?
Yeah, well, a lot of the images I was able to obtain, like photos of the studios and artists and things, I got from Gusto Records in Nashville. They also have a photo archive, and they were nice enough to allow me to have that stuff on display at the library. But then we were talking about this project, about a display that could be mobile, that could be shown in any kind of place, and whether we could use a lot of those images that Gusto essentially has and owns. So we had to go down to Nashville and we did our little song and dance with those guys and kind of show them kind of our ideas, and they liked it. So we got permission to use a lot of photos, and we've gotten photos from, you know, family members of different artists like Kathy Copas, whose dad was Cowboy Copas, and different people who were involved with the King Studios, Steve Halper, whose uncle was Sid Nathan. You know, we've gotten different sources for photos to put together, and that's what this exhibit is photos and texts, history, words, and stuff like that.
Have you guys made a lot of trips to Cleveland with this exhibit?
Yeah, well, we went up there over a year ago. Me and Chris went up there to talk to Andy Lynch, who's the director of the library and archives. Did a presentation with him and his staff about this. You know, at that time, we had 2/3 of the exhibit done, so we actually could show them what it looked like and whether it was something they would be interested in doing. And they immediately were. I don't remember her name on the staff, but I just remember this woman getting up and walking along and going, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, which is, you know, there's a lot of people who recorded for King who were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, over a dozen, at least 15 people. And so we have a lot of those people into the exhibit, their photos and stuff. So the idea is they have a lot of the items from those since they've been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And so this is a reason for them to dig out some of their stuff from their archives and have that different artifacts on display with this traveling exhibit we have.
Okay, so that begs the question, what kind of items did they pull out?
Well, the most exciting one for me is Freddie King's guitar. That's on display.
Yeah, that was very cool.
A lot of old records. They've got like a lot of King records, like Delmore Brothers, and different photos and different. They had a couple of King records letters. They got different stuff. But yeah, the Freddie King guitar was pretty cool.
The guitar was nice because you rarely see things like, at least I've rarely seen things like instruments or clothing, or, you know, when you go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you see like outfits and things like that. Somebody's guitar and the, you know, the grooves where the pick guard is and stuff is really neat stuff.
So it's going to be exciting to see what you all have put together up there.
Yeah. They have some display cases of items they'll have up there.
And there's a special day at the end of the month, February 28th, with an appearance by Bootsy Collins, who was inducted into the Rock Hall in 1997. It's the official dedication of the exhibit with a live interview with Bootsy. Are you all going to be up there?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not. I think Chris might be able to make it, but I work at the library, and I'm in charge of Black History Month programming at the library, at the main library, so it's kind of like February, I can't get out of town. But the exhibit's going to be up until mid-July, so they'll probably be doing some more programs. I think they're going to have Seymour Stein later on. I don't know if that's confirmed yet, but they are trying to hope to do a couple of other people who are involved with King Records history to be there and do some more programs during the run of the exhibit.
Well, could you talk just a little bit about Bootsy's career at King?
Sure. Yeah, Bootsy, he actually starts back when he was about 15 years old when he started working at King about 66, 67. Him and his brother were in a band. His brother was older than he. I think Catfish was probably about 21 and Bootsy was probably about 15, but they were in a local band together and they got to know Charles Sperling, who worked at King as an A&R guy. And Charles Sperling had saw them perform around town in different clubs. And Charles Sperling's the one who got those guys into King, and they ended up being session players. And they would play not on James Brown stuff, but they were playing other people. King was still signing other R&B acts, people that would be from around Cincinnati sometimes. Charles Sperling would find people who was sort of a talent scout. And so they were sort of backing those people. And then James Brown sort of, you know, he came under Bootsy and his brother sort of came under James Brown's eye, but still weren't part of his band. He started putting them under James Brown Productions. And so he would have them work on James Brown Productions, like other artists like Marva Whitney and Hank Ballard. So they would record for those artists and go on the road with them. But then eventually, it's a long story, but yeah, they actually became James Brown's backup band. There was a big dispute with James Brown's band over money. It's a very dramatic thing in Georgia where they weren't going to play that night. So James Brown had his plane sent up to Cincinnati to pick up Bootsy and Catfish and some of the other guys in the band and brought them down to this concert to play. And they didn't even, Bootsy says he didn't even know they were even going to be, they thought they were the opening act. They had no idea they were the opening. And they became the James Brown backup, the JBs. And they went around the world. They played in Africa, they played in Europe and all around America and stuff.
And he's still here in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I know he's very proud of his King Records. Feels like that's where he got his start at. That's where his career started.
Kind of like Seymour Stein.
And Seymour Stein, same story. He is very attached to the King story because he feels like that's where he learned the music business.
And Chris, one quick question. Could you update us on the renovations going on at the King Records studio over on Brewster?
I'm probably not the best person to speak to that, but there's renovations. I know that they are putting a new roof on. When they were putting the new roof on, there were a lot of rotted joists. As they got deeper and deeper into it, just more and more problems, of course, like any renovation. But the idea is to put a roof on and to seal it up, to try to get water to wash away from it, to have it graded correctly, tuck pointing, and just trying to preserve it for now so that it can be used properly in the future. And I think they're pretty close to being done with that.
Thanks for coming in tonight.
Thanks, Leah.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Chris Shadler from King Studios and Brian Powers, who is a music historian and expert on King Records. The exhibit King Records, 30 Years That Changed American Music, 1943 to 73, is open in February in honor of Black History Month and will be officially dedicated with the appearance of Bootsy Collins on February 28th. You'll find more information at wvxu.org/AroundCincinnati. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Lee Hay.